Tonight on Life on the Rock, we have Renzo and Monica Ortega, part one. I'll give a reflection and much more. Welcome to Life on the Rock. Tonight our guest is Renzo and Monica Ortega. They run the Two Become Family Apostolate. It consists of a website and a podcast. They do preparation for marriage work with couples. They work with the youth, their assistant youth directors at their parish. So tonight they're going to talk about their work. We're going to talk about the greatness of marriage, what marriage entails, and it's going to be a two-parter as well.
Yeah, we need to hear more about marriage, and I think the beauty, the joy, but also the challenges that come with it. And so I think they give really good wisdom and practical advice about how to enter into a good marriage. So we're now going to a reflection with Father Mark.
Have you ever asked the question, what's it all about? Maybe sometimes in life we hit some struggles or lack of fulfillment. It could be a particular time that we ask this question. And sometimes this question can stay with us, I think, the entirety of our lives. And maybe as we live, we work out an answer to this question of what's it all about. There's something in us that searches for a meaning to things, especially suffering and difficulties that we have. And we come away with a feeling like there's got to be more. There's got to be more in life. There's this innate desire in us for a deeper fulfillment than what this world can give us, for the fullness of life, for a real purpose, for a desire to use all our talents and abilities to fire on all cylinders, so to speak, to be in relationship with others, to have friendships, you know, to build a story together with someone else. Not just one activity after another, but to build a story, to have some history with another person. And of course, a desire, and sometimes it goes unrecognized, but to really give ourselves to others. That's where we find a deeper fulfillment in sharing and giving what we possess, maybe interiorly or whatever, to give of our time, talent, and treasure. You know, Vatican II said that man has been created by God for a blissful purpose beyond the reach of earthly misery. That's pretty realistic way of saying it. A blissful purpose beyond the reach of earthly misery, that there's got to be more out there. And of course, the answer is found in our relationship with God, discovering His presence in our life, to have a real relationship where we talk to Him in prayer, we commune with Him, we share our desires with Him. And man has, I think, also made this desire for fulfillment in our religious expression. I mean, throughout man's history, whatever religions and whatever cultures, pagan religions, you know, gives expression to this with a prayer life, with rituals, with sacrifices, with meditations. We're innately religious. Today we tend to run away from that, right? We're spiritual, not religious. But we, in this search, we want to act out on it. We want to concretize it. You know, we want to express it. And our religion can help us find that meaning, find that purpose, and unite us with God. Well, Monica and Renzo, welcome to Life on the Rock.
Thank you. So good to be here.
And thank you for your ministry. I'm so impressed by things I listen to, and just talking to you personally about your work with preparing couples and in marriage itself. And that's the first part I wanted to talk about in this interview, was the greatness of marriage. I feel like we have to sell that to Gen Z now, because there's so many scary things about it. What are some of the, because you work with young people, you're also youth directors, what are some of the things you tell them, and what are their fears?
So one of the things I think we try to do, instead of always telling them with our words, is just we bring our family around a lot. So even in youth ministry, our kids are with us a lot. We do it together. We invite engaged couples over to our home to have dinner with us, and newlyweds, they bring their babies when they start having children. And so I think one of our ways of trying to share the goodness of marriage ourselves is to just have it be around them, mm-hmm. and to just enjoy one another with them and have right. good company.
I remember after one of our youth group nights, one of the teens came up to us after and said, "You are the first couple that speaks pleasantly about your family," because they're so used to older adults complaining about their families, complaining about their responsibilities and spouses and kids, and they were just happy to hear that family can be happy. Yeah. And that was like, that witness was number one, and then following that up with reminding them it is hard, because I think sometimes we want the happiness of marriage and not any of the hard things in marriage, and showing them that you could have both together, that there could be a joyfulness in the toughness of marriage, but that it's good because it's different. There's nothing else like it, and especially with the new generation, Gen Z, and even millennials, they want to live a little bit more for themselves, and they want that comfort that comes with daily living, and marriage really challenges that. But then witnessing that the challenge is a good thing, and that there's even greater out there than what comforts you might have.
Right. I know Pope Benedict spoke about the evangelization that happens from the witness of the family, just people living that out well, and how it's attractive, it draws people. And I think too, I'd like to remind people it's a sacrament.
Yeah.
It's one of the sacraments of the church. So not only is it good, it's holy.
Yes.
And all these acts of marriage that you do in caring for one another, raising kids, our steps to holiness.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
So talk about that spirituality. Is it? It's not a cakewalk, is
sure.
it?
Sure. No, it's not a cakewalk. And I think you speak about spirituality, and I think oftentimes when we think of spirituality, what we imagine is how much we're praying, how much silence are we getting, how much peace and quiet is there. And that just really doesn't exist much in family life. Family life is very busy. It's very messy.
You have five kids.
We have five kids.
Ages 2 to 9.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah. There's a lot of messes, and four of them are boys. So yeah. It's messy and chaotic. But that's actually where the holiness of the vocation and the sacrament of marriage comes in, is it's in those choices of those tasks, to really engage in them and to really like live in that mess and to live in. We talk a lot about Jesus is the God the Father, and Jesus is incarnate, and he lived a life, and so us living our life is our path to holiness. That's our calling. And we in the sacrament rely on the grace to be able to do that well. It's definitely not us that does it well all the time. But yeah, just to remember that, like, that is the holiness of the sacrament, is doing the life.
Yeah, we joke with our friends, and they've said it before, that the monastery bell in the domestic church is the kids crying in the middle of the night, saying that they're sick and having to take care of them, all the messes that you see when you walk into a room. Like, those are our opportunities to remember that this is something greater that we're doing, and really encountering Christ in that, and letting him be incarnate in those moments.
And Jesus is present in the sacraments, so he's present in marriage, he's present in each of the spouses to one another, right, in serving, loving the other.
Right.
And talk about the fulfillment of marriage, maybe on an individual level and a communal level. Renzo, you know, always told that the women have to change these guys and make them, livable with. But talk about that kind of change that happens.
It was one thing to read that husbands have to love their wives as Christ loved the church, and I could see that, and I romanticized it, thinking like I'm gonna die on my shield and be there for my bride. But once you get married and you really get into the thick of it and realize that there's a lot of sacrifices you need to make that prior to marriage your life didn't demand of you. Right. There's a lot of giving of yourself in ways that are uncomfortable, that aren't desirable. People will expect things from you that you may not expect of yourself, and really having to learn to step up and live in that moment, in that reality that you are called to be Christ to your family. Mm-hmm. Really had to, it was a hard lesson I had to learn. It took about 4 to 5 years to be in marriage to finally have it click and realize that I'm called to more than what I was expecting, and that Monica's desire for me was not a nagging, but a she realized what I was being called to, and she was brave enough and relied on sacraments enough to call me up into that and allow grace to work and prayed for me, and because of that, marriage was able to kind of transform my heart into becoming more of the man that God was desiring me to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And Monica, you as a mother, just for our young people out there listening, talk about that transformation.
Sure. Yeah, so there's definitely this before motherhood Monica and after motherhood Monica, right? And I was reminded that it took a few kids from this to kind of like really sink in, so I'm a little hard-headed, but that like the physical changes that mothers go through in growing their children and feeding their children and caring for their children and all of the changes in the hormones and everything is a physical manifestation of a greater reality that I have been transformed into something and into something new, and that is the call of Christ, mm-hmm. right? To be transformed into something new and something greater. And It's sometimes tricky, and we can get a little resentful. We might push back on it a little bit because it might not always be a transformation we asked for,
right.
but here it is, right? And I'm also reminded too of Christ's example of service, not just dying on the cross, but washing the feet of his apostles, right? Mm. And it's in that service to our children and our service to our husbands that we find holiness in those choices to give of our lives in big ways and also like in small ways.
Right. And in working, you help out with the youth in the parish and working with them, that's very much on their minds is, you know, especially college age, you know, looking to get married. What do you tell them about discerning that call to marriage or even to priesthood, religious life?
We really try to emphasize, number one, that they need to have an active prayer life, that they can't have a distracted prayer life or a sometimes prayer life, but they need to have an active prayer life where they're constantly seeking God's grace, and then being able to remove the sins in their lives that can prevent them from hearing God's call, whether it be to married or religious life or the priesthood. If they are stuck in sin, they're not going to be able to hear that. And then lastly, we really push them to try to find a good holy spiritual director, because as they discern God's call and they're praying actively and they're seeking the spiritual life, having a spiritual director that can kind of guide them in the correct direction, just so that they can be more aware of what God's doing in their lives. We really like to start there before, because a lot of people want to hear like, well, give me the practicals. Well, those are the practicals first, because once that foundation is set, then you're more able to hear what God wants from you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you're living a life of virtue and free from sin, then that path will be more easy to see. It'll be more laid out for you, because all of our call is holiness, regardless of what sacramental vocation we may have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll jump to this too, about, you know, there's pornography is a big problem today, promiscuity. And if a couple has fallen into that, what kind of effects does that have on the marriage that you've seen?
Yeah, it can definitely challenge a marriage, because your perception of that intimate part of your marriage has been distorted a little bit by your actions. And then also there's always, again, you said it's the sacrament, there's always that call for freedom and healing and grace that can come in. So it's not a death sentence to your relationship, but it's certainly a challenge that can twist it, and sometimes in subtle ways that you might not see. But if you are willing to take that hard look at those behaviors, how is it affecting my intimate relationship with my spouse or my future spouse, and what do I really want for them and for us?
Right, because whether it be past use or active use, there's a distortion that happens between those spouses that is very subtle, but slowly you start seeing your spouse as an object to be used rather than a person to be loved, and that really undercuts the entire reality of marriage, and the healing that has to happen has to start with one taking that sin out and then slowly realizing what are the wounds that I was filling with that sin. And that healing only happens through grace and only through the sacrament. Some people may have to go through therapy or different other types of help to be able to overcome that sin, but I think acknowledging that it's not okay in the relationship. I know there's ways to rationalize it, but acknowledging that it fundamentally distorts what marriage ought to be and what intimacy ought to be.
It slowly shifts it from a what can I gain. It's I'm going to use a harsh word, but it's a bit selfish when you use intimacy in that way, when the greater call for sexual intimacy is to be a self-gift. Mm-hmm. So it's the same behaviors, but it's shifting the perspective, and it's turning it into, where am I directing this, towards myself or towards my beloved?
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Monica and Renzo in just a moment. Monica and Renzo, what difference does marriage make? We're talking about premarital sex. You hear that today. Well, I love the person. But what difference does marriage make?
Yeah, I mean, you said it before, it's a sacrament. And in this sacrament, there's a covenant. And there's this promise. And it's not a contract. It's not, if you give me this, I'll give you that. But it's, I'm giving my entire life to you. Right. And you're giving, and I'm receiving your entire life as a gift. And so when we speak a language with our bodies before that fullness of the covenant has been made, we're not speaking in full truth. We're in a sense lying with the language of our bodies. So we want to work, if that's been something that's happened in a couple's past, you want to take some steps to undo some of that, maybe levels of mistrust or levels of just inauthentic communication with one another, and redeem that and bring that back to the fullness of what it was intended for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like in marriage, you're making this bond, this commitment, and then the conjugal act, is living this reality out, you know, two becoming one flesh.
Right.
And yeah, to do it without, it's like, it's something so, I tell young people this sometimes too, it's like, it's so powerful, it's more powerful than what you know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the sexual act is like joining you, but
yes,
the reality of being joined isn't there.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And you make the point too, in discerning marriage, we can jump to lofty virtues of kindness and humility, which I think is so overlooked, but also, how did you describe it in looking for the spouse, the one that brings you a joy? And
sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, you're choosing somebody to spend the rest of your life with. You would like to enjoy most of that, right? So it's good to find somebody that you can play with and have a good time with. And it's, I kind of describe it as like finding your favorite person. Who do you want to spend those days with? So I think that's really important too. It's good to find somebody who's virtuous and is striving for holiness and checks a lot of those, like, you know, boxes that you might put on a list, but also make sure that you just like the person.
Yeah.
And that adds that's a great foundation for the times where marriage becomes hard. Because if you like being with that person, you may not like them in the moment, but you like being with that person and you love that person, you're more willing to go through the hard times because you know that you're their favorite person and you've committed to them to do this together.
And you desire good for that person because you care about them and you have that trust that they also desire your good. So when we're in conflict or confrontation, that comes from a place of love and fidelity and friendship and not just frustration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Frustration a little bit.
And the marriage being crowned with children, right? What is that like? You guys are in your 30s now. Yeah. Do you pinch yourself sometimes?
I remember being a teenager, and I never liked when my parents said to me, just wait until you have kids. You have no idea what it'll be like. Just wait until you have kids. And then having kids and being like, oh, they were right. Like, there's no way to describe it until you have them. And one of the things that I've joked about is that the little parts about yourself that annoy you, that you wish you didn't do, they come out in your children. You're like, oh, that's me. That's the selfishness, that tone, that strut, like, oh, that's me.
Yeah.
And then seeing seeing them and loving them anyway. There's nothing like it, and it's such a beautiful reality. And at the same time, it's so difficult because there's nothing harder than being a parent and having to give yourself complete to this person who will willingly take everything and say not say thank you once.
It's also wild though to flip that, to see those pieces that you love about your spouse in your children. Yeah. So the things that you really like, those things that created your friendship, they also pick up on, and they have those little qualities too. So you just, there's this bond with parents and children that, because you're a little bit like each other and you're a little bit not like each other, that it's just wild. It's so wild.
Y'all have the funniest story about, the marriage comes first in a sense. You have to make sure that's solid. But one of your sons tried to weasel his way in there.
Yeah, no. Our two-year-old recently, I think a couple days ago, jumped into our bed. It was
like in the morning. We were just waking up.
Yeah. And he looks at me and he said, "Daddy, you're in our bed." And our bed, like my bed. Yeah, why are you in our bed? And it's funny because the younger kids, the ones that are more attached to mommy, like they have this, they desire mommy and they desire everything about her, and
she's mine
and I kind of get pushed to the side, but we try to instill in all the kids that they understand that our relationship comes first. Obviously the two-year-old doesn't know that yet, but he will eventually know that mommy and daddy's relationship, our love, is what this family is founded on, and that love is founded on God, and they know that, they're aware of it, and they respect it, and they see that our family can thrive because of that.
I think one of the struggles today for young couples, you're saying, that are a little bit fearful of marriage, is they sometimes haven't seen like a joyful, happy marriage. Maybe they don't have many examples of that in their life. So we try at home to prioritize time with one another. So when Renzo comes home from work, the first 10, he says hello to everybody, kisses hello, and then the first 10 minutes are mommy's time. She gets to catch me up on things, and everybody else can share their stories later. But we also do try to be like affectionate in front of our children. We hold hands and we kiss in front of them so that they see that even if we might bicker or have a disagreement, they also see us loving and caring for one another too.
Well, we're going to do a second show with you, and just to preview it a little bit, you're talking about the struggles and areas of growth, things you all had to work through in your marriage. You're both children of divorced parents and things, so we're going to talk more about the experience and the hope you give. So I'm looking forward to that, but thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, it's time for our End of the Vineyard challenge, so to speak. What struck you about the interview?
There were a number of things, but one of them I thought was important was the part on discernment about how do you choose a spouse. And I think there's probably four qualities to kind of look for. Of course, physical attraction, but I think a big part, and they hit on it very well, was the aspect of friendship. Do I even like this person? Do I enjoy spending time with this person? Because I think, you know, that relationship's really going to be founded on that. I think, too, are they virtuous is a big part. Do they, you know, do they take the faith seriously? Just to have those, just to have that kind of identity check, too, of knowing where somebody is at in their spiritual life, I think goes a long way. But also just the personality, too, which I think ties a lot into the friendship aspect of just wanting to spend time with the other person and not retreating to my own room or going away, but really just building that relationship. And I think those are just qualities to really look at.
Yeah, sometimes we could take a very pious view, you know, and just look at these very exalted things, but it's good to keep the very common sense things. Also, we talked a lot about grace. I know Renzo had a powerful experience in high school. He went to a Steubenville Youth Conference, and adoration really struck him. And then Monica had a powerful experience in confession. And that's been a theme in their marriage, that you know, that marriage is not just a good, it's holy, it's great. And that means God's grace is operating in that, right? The sacramental life that we live, prayer, adoration, and going to confession, is, you know, God's giving us grace in the sacraments. Yeah.
And I think too, there's almost like, if I can say, it's like a double grace, because it's transformative in the sense of being a husband and father, or a husband and wife, in that respect. But then you're also growing into the father-mother aspect.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that, a lot of self-denial. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a beautiful thing, because they both spoke of this transformation, but it's an ongoing transformation as well. And again, to rely on that grace, because it's going to get messy.
Right.
And, you know, but, you know, God's grace will restore it, will heal it, will make it grow and flourish, though.
Yeah, Jesus calls some of us to the beautiful vocation of marriage, and he also calls us to do hard things in our vocation, right? So he gives us the grace to do it. He gives us one another to help each other, you know, in living out our vocation. So I just think they were a great witness for us tonight. And we'll send you into that vineyard with a blessing. May our Heavenly Father shine his face upon you. May he give you his peace. May he bless you with every good gift and grace and guide you throughout your life. May God bless you, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. We'll see you next week on Life on the Rock. Redeemed.